Here's a line of poetry by Virgil, the ancient Roman poet. Not for yourselves do you birds build your nests. Not for yourselves do you birds build your nests. In Latin, these words were inscribed on a doorway inside a chapel in Poland nearly 450 years ago. The chapel was built by members of the first Unitarian movement in Europe. They called themselves the Polish Brethren. The movement began in the mid-1500s, early in the Protestant Reformation, and the movement flourished for less than a century before it was wiped out by the Catholic rulers of Poland. The Polish Brethren existed before the word Unitarian was coined. However, without them, Unitarian religious ideas would not have spread in Europe or across the Atlantic to North America. Not for yourselves alone do you build your nests. This past summer, I read those words on a chapel wall during a brief tour in Poland with an international group of UUs. I'd like to tell you about the Polish Brethren, but first I want to mention a few things that I've learned about Poland in general. In the late 1700s, Poland was carved up and taken apart and controlled by its neighboring empires, Russia and Prussia and Austria. That means that Poland didn't appear as a country on a map for 123 years. It was restored as a nation in 1918 after the First World War. 2 decades later, Nazi Germany invaded Poland and began to make a colony out of it. The Nazis closed universities and executed intellectuals, professors, artists, clergymen, and activists. In many cities, they walled Polish Jews into ghettos and took away their property. On a walking tour of the Jewish quarter of the city of Krakow, I stood on a broad stone plaza, exactly where Nazis had rounded up Jewish people at gunpoint. Healthy people were taken away to labor camps. The weaker ones were taken away to death camps. Jews had lived in Poland for 8 centuries. They had survived segregation and suspicion and periodic violence by non-Jewish Polish people. They made Poland the Jewish cultural capital of the world. During World War II, however, 3 million Jews died in Poland, half the total number killed in the Holocaust. Another 1,900,000 non-Jewish Poles also died in that war. After the war ended in 1945, Poland fell under the control of Soviet Russia, which expelled Polish citizens of German origin who had been living there for generations. Communist repression persisted for 4 decades. Now, 30 years after the fall of communism, tourists visit Poland from all over the world to enjoy the charm of its preserved old cities, the energy of its rebuilt cities, and its arts, music, and natural beauty. In July, I was part of a group of 20 Unitarian Universalist pilgrims to Poland. Among us were several North Americans, and a few each from Germany, Great Britain, and the Transylvanian region of Romania. And there was one friendly teacher from Bulgaria. There's a newer group of UUs that's formed in Warsaw, Poland's capital city, and some of them joined us in Krakow for the trip. I especially enjoyed Justyna, a charming woman from Warsaw. She brought along her teenage daughter and her elderly mother. On our first morning, Justyna told us, "I hope this is more than a tour for you, but also a pilgrimage." And she added that our visit was important because it shows local towns that foreign tourists are interested in the history of the Polish Brethren. She hopes to spur local authorities to realize that it's in their economic interest to fix up and care for the remaining Unitarian historical sites. To make sure we were a visible group, she gave each of us a bright orange tote bag imprinted with a chalice and the words Polish Brethren on it in Polish and English that we were supposed to carry when we were walking around. The Brethren were a small movement of utopian radicals and Christian heretics. As they understood it, the core message of Jesus and his disciples was nonviolence, love of your neighbor and love of your enemy. So, like other pacifist religions, they refused military service. They opposed violent punishments for crimes. In the Acts of Apostles in the Bible, after the crucifixion of Jesus, his apostles keep his ministry going, and in so doing, they share all their possessions in common. Following this model, the Polish Brethren congregations shared their property too and held it in common, sort of small-scale communist economics, or maybe more like a family for them. On theological questions, the Brethren did not require uniformity of belief. Honoring the freedom of conscience, they exchanged their beliefs and questions openly with one another, sharing disagreements with respect and love. What made them heretics to the Catholic Church and to the larger Protestant groups is that the Brethren did not see Jesus as part of the Trinity. Jesus was holy, they said, but not the same as God. In spite of this anti-Trinitarian heresy, the Polish Brethren congregations flourished for nearly a century in the city of Krakow and in the smaller towns in the middle of Poland. You might be wondering how that was possible for them to survive, and this is how. Starting in the 1600s, nobles began electing the Polish king. Each king could serve a life term, but his children could not inherit the throne. That gave the nobility lots of power. They had control over the lands they owned. Each noble could decide what religion the tenants and workers on their lands would practice. The more enlightened or generous nobles allowed their tenants and workers to choose their own faiths. The Brethren movement spread and built homes on several estates and chapels. On our trip, we visited several chapels, some still on private estates, and others that are falling apart in small rural towns. If a chapel building had two stories, the minister lived on the second story. Meetings for worship and education and intellectual interchange took place on the ground floor. We saw a couple of estates where the current owners have restored their chapels. One afternoon, a retired chemist and his wife hosted us at their home. Though he is Catholic, he has fixed up the chapel on his property and filled it with books and pictures from the Polish Brethren history. In spite of their small numbers, the Brethren were able to spread their Unitarian ideas because they owned a printing press. And they founded a religious academy. They located these in the city of Raków, which they also founded. Back then, Raków was a bustling city. Now it's only a small town, which most folks in Poland currently have never heard of. Our visit coincided with Raków's 450th anniversary. In the center of town is a well-maintained one-story white building surrounded by hedges and flowers. Originally, it was the mayor's house. Now it houses the local history museum. We arrived there one afternoon for a reception given in our honor. The waiting crowd of Rakovian citizens offered snacks and beverages. Youth dressed in period costumes were demonstrating crafts and chores of days gone by, hammering a horseshoe, scrubbing clothes on a washboard, copying documents with a quill pen. Displays on the walls showed people from Raków's history, including the Polish Brethren, but also Catholics and the sizable Jewish community that had lived there for centuries. The town of Raków, founded by Protestant heretics, is now Catholic. A tall stone Catholic church stands on land that used to house the Polish Brethren's Chapel. That we saw that in a few towns. Big Catholic church, formerly a chapel was there. Fortunately, the local historical society and the mayor and a few other city council members think that it's important to celebrate the city's whole history. They were there to greet us officially. Our organizer and historical guide for this trip was the Reverend Dr. Jay Atkinson, a UU minister and historian who lives in the Bay Area. Jay presented a framed letter of support and friendship to the town's dignitaries from the president of our American denomination, the Reverend Susan Frederick Gray. This is a picture of me with the mayor holding the letter as if I was presenting it. I wasn't, but it was a photo op. The letter conveys her congratulations and kindest regards to the residents of Rakov as they celebrate the 450th anniversary of the settlement of their town. Susan also thanks them for the work they are doing to preserve the memory of the history of the town and to educate the children of Rakov about the historic influence of their town in the religious history of the Polish people and many others around the world. Our Polish friends hope this letter that's hanging in the museum now and the sight of our group of tourists with our orange tote bags might sway the sympathies of the less friendly politicians in town to keep restoring the history. What happened to the Brethren is this. The combination of a newly strong Catholic monarchy and intolerant Catholic nobility expelled them for heresy. Actually, it gave them a choice. Convert to Catholicism, leave Poland, or be killed. In the museum is a small copy of a painting that actually is on the ceiling of the Bishop's Palace in the city not far from there. And this painting commemorates the judgment against the heretics. It celebrates their expulsion. That was in the mid-1600s. Our first morning together on this tour, we had breakfast in the big city of Krakow, and then we piled on a motor coach and headed out. On our way to Rakov, we'd stop and see two chapels in the countryside. Our bus driver made a stop at a gas station so we could buy snacks or use the restroom before we went to one of these rural sites. While outside the bus, Jay Atkinson fell and hit his head. As he lay on the ground, a few folks attended to him and the rest of us gathered nearby. He had a cut on his forehead and a black eye. Justyna, our friend from Warsaw, called an ambulance to take Jay to an area hospital to make sure that he'd not had a brain injury. Two paramedics arrived and spoke to Jay in English as they checked him out. They took him away and Justyna went along to the hospital. And the rest of us got on the bus to visit the next chapel. Since it was Sunday morning, Jay had planned a brief worship service in the next chapel that we'd be seeing. Now Jay was out of commission. "No problem," said Jarek, a UU from the group in Warsaw. As our local organizer, Jarek was in charge. He said, "I'm sure the other ministers in the group will come up with something." I quietly slid down my seat in the bus. I had barely met this group, and I was not inclined to put myself out on a limb for a Sunday service. We arrived, got off the bus, and walked through the high grass to the chapel. We entered the brick building. The air was cooler inside, and light came in through a high open window. We took seats on a few rows of bare wooden benches. Jarek covered a table with an embroidered fabric and set a vase of flowers on it. He placed a red egg-shaped candle on a saucer as the chalice. A person behind me leaned forward. "Are you going to say something?" We'll see. I'd rather not, I replied. But Yarek persisted. We have three ministers here. Surely they can do something. So the three of us went behind the table, me from the U.S., one from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and one from the Unitarian Church of Transylvania. We conferred about who would do what. I said I'd like the chalice. And then as I did, I said, we light this flame to honor our brave ancestors in faith. May they inspire us to look toward the future with courage. I asked the crowd, what should we sing? After a few nominees were discussed, the guy from Bulgaria said, most people can sing This Little Light of Mine. Let's sing that. Then he recounted all the verses of that African-American spiritual, and we sang it. And then after we sang it, the Unitarian minister from Belfast, Northern Ireland, read a passage from the book of Jeremiah on his smartphone. The prophet Jeremiah speaks in that passage about the stones set into the building and how the stones will be enduring witnesses for the community. The minister then spoke of the old, worn stones under our feet there. He reminded us that our ancestors had assembled right there over those stones for worship and conversation regularly and peacefully. Next, a minister from the Unitarian Church of Transylvania sang a solo for us of a hymn in Hungarian. And then we had a few minutes of silence. After he ended the silence, I spoke once more. I invited people to join me in spoken prayers, adding their own sorrows, concerns, and joys as they wished, sort of like what Lucy did this morning, although nobody participated when I invited them to. But I spoke. I said, we ask for healing, first for our friend Jay, and for all others in our lives who need healing. And we ask for healing for Poland, this country we are visiting, this land which has endured so much violence and pain for so many centuries. So many people here and all over Europe have suffered repression, cruelty, and killing over the centuries. Let us pray for peace for their land and peace for everyone in every land. After the service, we went to lunch at a local restaurant, and then after lunch, Justina called from the hospital. Jay was still weak, but he had not had a concussion. His forehead was stitched up, and he was ready to leave. He wanted us to swing by and get him out of there. And other than the historical events that we learned about, that was the only point of drama on our tour. In the 1500s, the most significant contributor to Unitarian religious thought was an Italian scholar named Fausto Sozzini. Fausto Sozzini traveled around Europe to preach and teach, but he spent most of his time in Poland. This is a copy of one of his books in Latin and a picture of him on it. Thanks to the printing press at the Brethren's Academy in Raków, the writings of Sozzini and other non-Trinitarian thinkers were distributed around Europe and into Great Britain. Consequently, his ideas had a lasting impact on liberal religious history. In Latin, his name is Faustus Socinus, and his theology is called Socinianism. You could say that we are Socinians. In 1550, Sozzini moved to the city of Krakow, where he preached at the Polish Brethren Church. Sozzini stayed there for 48 years until it became too risky to stay. In 1591, the Polish Brethren Church was destroyed in riots. In 1598, a mob dragged Sozzini out of his home, burned up his books, and nearly threw him into the river. Professors in the nearby university rescued Socini, and he fled from Krakow. He was given a warm welcome and a refuge on the estate of a noble family in the town of Lusławice. On our last full day in Poland, we rode out to see that estate. Lusławice is an hour or so from Krakow. Though it's a small town in the country, for a decade, Lusławice has been the home to a very large European music center, a large training academy founded by the famous composer Krzysztof Penderecki. Early in the service, Irina and Mary played his piece Aria on the piano. Though we did not meet Penderecki, he had allowed us to visit his estate and walk around. Here's a picture of part of the enormous grounds of the place and a picture of his manor house. It was to this property in 1598 where Socini found refuge, where he fled and found refuge. For the next 6 years, he lived and worked in the chapel on these grounds, which you see has been restored. Socini died in 1604. He was buried in the nearby town, but an angry mob, stirred up by a clergy person, dug up his remains and desecrated his grave, and nobody knows where he's buried. But historians and Unitarian Universalists from around the world salvaged his tombstone and erected a monument to Socini on the grounds of Penderecki's estate. We made a pilgrimage to that monument. We placed a bouquet of flowers with a ribbon honoring Socini's bravery for the cause of religious freedom. We took a minute of silence. Those of us who knew the hymn, Spirit of Life, sang it for the others. For nearly a century, the movement of the Polish Brethren flourished, and then they were wiped out. Yet their spiritual gifts have endured for centuries since then, a free faith based on the principles of love and respect, a model of sharing burdens, needs, and resources in community, and a legacy of open dialogue and religious exploration. The poet Virgil says to his feathered friends, "Not for yourselves alone do you build your nests." Our Polish brethren ancestors found these words inspiring enough to put them on a chapel wall. I do have an idea of what guidance they found in those words, but I can't be sure. But this is what I take them to mean. Honor the revelations of the Spirit in you and in everyone. Listen to and heed the call of your spirit. Listen to it for your own sake and for that of others. Remember that in this world we do not live for ourselves alone. We are connected with all people and with all beings who share this life with us, and for all who will be here after we are gone. Not alone for ourselves do we act and speak, give and receive. Not for ourselves alone do we hope for peace or try to build a world where peace can thrive. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.